This is The Antidote by Amani.
Welcome to The Antidote, where we search for the cure to today's viral social issues for millennials and Gen Z. And today we have the honor of searching for the cure with none other than actress, author, and activist Diane Guerrero. Diane, thank you so much for jumping on the podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. You know, I am a big fan of you and our friendship. And so I'm so honored to be here with you.
100%. That's the thing. I mean, before all those descriptions, you are just such a homegirl to me, which I think is going to be very apparent over the course of this conversation. But obviously, most people out there are already familiar with you and who you are because they've most likely fallen in love with one of the many iconic characters that you've played, from Orange is the New Black to Jane the Virgin to Doom Patrol. But not many people know that I actually know you from a completely different lane, which is from your career as an author and the incredible tale of your life experience that you've really been sharing and been so public about, so in such a raw and honest way. And I would love for you to kind of share a little bit about that part of your story for those that aren't aware of it.
Yeah. Where was it? Where was it that we met? What was that program?
It was Face the Nation.
Face the Nation.
Face the Nation. It was like, I remember it was like the head of the year. It was like on New Year's Day.
It was. Yeah. I like didn't want to go in. I remember I was just like, I had just written the book or just released it. In the Country We Love is my memoir that I wrote. And, you know, I was doing all of these interviews and going here and going there. And I was still very afraid. You know, I had shared my very personal story. A lot of people kind of want to say that it's a book about immigration or even dismiss it as an a book about immigration, which is like, even if it was a book about immigration, why would you dismiss it? But alas, this is sort of like the country that we're living in. It's about me surviving this oppressive system, really, and using the tools that my family gave me for the time that we had together. You know, essentially my family unit died that day when I got home from school and they were gone. And I made the very difficult decision to stay behind and finish high school and born in Jersey, raised in Boston, Massachusetts. And Boston at the time had a very good healthcare system. And I was familiar, my community was there, my high school was there. And I was really determined. I really thought that if I worked really, 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 really hard, that I could make something of myself. And because my parents always told me that, they were like, continue with your education, keep being who you are, show them that you're worth being here. You know, now, of course, you know, that narrative has changed for me, especially because I know of the injustices that every person as an individual face, depending on skin color, depending on where you live. I know that I'm radicalized by class more than skin experience. And I know that has played a huge role in the way I was able to survive this. But I was a scrappy little thing, you know, I detailed that in my book. I was very resourceful. I reached out to my community for help. I remember the first time, when that happened, I went to school the next day. I went to school the next day. I asked the principal for a meeting. I go, listen, this is what happened to my family. I would like to continue attending the school. Please don't let them take me away. I want to keep going here and I'm going to go to college and I'm going to be good. You know, I'm not going to cause you any problems. And for a 14-year-old to go and say that to her high school principal, I think says a lot of where my head was at and that I had grown up really fast. This situation made me grow up really fast, you know, growing up in fear that my parents would one day be taken away. And of course it did happen and I had to act fast. And so the book is just talking about all of the reasons why I love my parents and why I can't be ashamed of something that happens to so many people. And the book is also about me not wanting that for anybody else, because I know what that feels like. I know the trauma that poses on families. You know, my family and I are still dealing on a daily basis with the trauma of that separation. And, you know, we're starting to heal now because we have made tremendous effort to do so. But like, you need so many resources to get over something like that. You know, I've been through tons of therapy. I, you know, keep working at it. There's so many things that come at me on a daily basis that are triggering to that trauma that I have to work through, and that we all have to go through. But yeah, so the book is kind of how I came to be here and how I came to use my voice in the way that I have.
I can't even imagine what that experience could have been like. I mean, just listening to the pain in your voice, retelling it for what I'm sure has to be the millionth time,
yes.
You know, and still, it's just, the wound is still as fresh as it was yesterday. And mm-hmm. I think that that's what has been so powerful about the narrative that you have insisted on putting out there, is that it really is placing a human face, a recognizable face, and an individual face to an issue that obviously has become just so lost in translation. And just hearing you talk about coming home one day and your family being ripped away from you, that's something that I'm sure for anybody listening could be very hard to imagine, you know, being in those shoes. And especially because of just what a tremendous success you are now, and also just such a powerful woman in your own right. I can speak from experience of me just being energized by your friendship and the way that you choose to lead your life as an example. It makes me wonder how, you know, especially when you're talking about this trauma, how did you go from that experience to still having hope and moving forward, and like, you can have a place here and you can belong?
Yeah, you know, I really credit that to my folks and my community, no doubt. Sometimes hope is the only thing you have. And you know, it's easy to become cynical. It's easy to say, you know what, I can't trust anybody. The whole world is out to get me. Nobody cares about me. But I think what I came to realize was that if I care enough about me, then that makes all the difference. If I care about me and I reach out to my community with honesty and love and vulnerability, then you won't be alone. And I really truly kept seeing that time and time again, every time I exercised that right, that human right of reaching out to your fellow siblings to say, I'm hurting and this is what I'm going through. Can you help me? And I did it through various ways. I did it, you know, when I called my best friend and her mother that day that I came home and my parents were gone. I did it when I went to the principal and I talked to them. I did it when I kept reaching out when I had a toothache and I just had to go and get it checked out. And it was scary, you know, being by myself, and they were like, well, where are your parents? And I'm like, well, they're just at work.
Wow.
They're just at work. I didn't want anyone to like know that I was by myself. And granted, not everyone has access to these things. And access to these programs are becoming less and less and less. And I mean, this happened to me in 2000, 2001. And certainly things have changed since then. Arts are barely in schools. Programs are being cut left and right. I consider myself extremely lucky. I went to an arts high school that really nurtured my dreams, understood some of my learning disabilities, even though I didn't know I had any at that point, but eventually got me to college. Not everyone gets to experience that. So I think I really did just have an imagination, and I don't know, for what it's worth, that's kind of what gave me hope, was that imagination to keep testing the universe and seeing what was possible. And every time I tested it and just said, you know what, let me just try it. Let me just see if they'll say yes. Let me just see if I can get this diploma. Let me just see if I can study abroad. Let me just see if I can join an acting class and let me just see if I can go to this audition. And man, maybe I can get a job in this. Who knows? So I just kept seeing that the more and more I said yes, the more and more the universe said yes. I mean, granted, there were a ton of no's, but I don't know. I didn't get bogged down by that just because there were, there was always some yes kind of like right around the corner that I was like waiting for. And I was like, shit, yes. I'm so glad that I went for that, you know, even though it was scary and I thought I wasn't good enough, you know, it was just kind of suppressing those feelings down and kind of living more in the what if.
Totally. And what, just listening to you tell this story, I mean, I feel like your life has been just such a testament to how so many of really the hottest topics and issues that are being at the center of debates, often without people that look like us that are being directly impacted, being the ones included in those conversations, you really show how those conversations trickle down, right, into mm-hmm. our everyday lives. Mm-hmm. And I'm very interested in hearing more what you have to say about especially these programs, the aid that is just absolutely necessary for the survival of so many of us that obviously lack many of the privileges that the society affords for certain groups of people. Mm-hmm. But before we do, I really wanted to kind of just hover on this idea of community for a minute, because mm-hmm. something that you said really just gave me this blinding light of, wow, this is why you are the person that you are. And it's just kind of put the Diane that I know into context, which is you talking about using every resource available to you, the community around you, mm-hmm. to find ways to move upward and forward every step of the way. And I'm sure you know where I'm getting at with this. This obviously resonates on a personal level because of personal conversations you and I have had very frequently recently. One thing that people should know on this podcast is that actually, I mean, by the time this episode goes up, our interview with Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley will already mm-hmm. have been live. But that was one of the first interviews that I did for this podcast. And we recorded it at your house. Yeah. And that was such a special moment to me. Honestly, you know how much that interview meant to me. And I think just the way that it came together made it mean even more. Because as you know, that morning, our shoot location fell through last minute. And I was freaking out about where I was going to conduct this really high profile interview with someone that I had looked up to for so long. And I randomly called you up so last minute, early in the morning. I was like, Diane, this is happening. Like, can I please come record at your place? Because we're literally neighbors out here in Los Angeles.
We're very close.
Yeah. And you said, girl, come on over. I have everything that you need. Lo and behold, I walk in and you have the ring light set up. You have this microphone. You have a whole rig and all of that. And the entire time you were just being just so hospitable to me and making sure I had everything that I need to make this possible. And then immediately after what to me was just such a brilliant interview and one that I was so happy about how it went, I experienced the worst nightmare scenario for any content creator, which was opening up my laptop to not finding the saved file. Mm-hmm. And you went through that with me, that whole emotional roller coaster, because you were the first person I texted when I was freaking out. And you were kind of like literally living through that wild ride with me. Yeah. When we were talking, I told you like, okay, first of all, you are being super supportive, this scenario, that scenario, maybe this solution, all of that. But then I came back to you at the end of the day and I said, okay, so I took some time to meditate. I reached out to my dad for an Islamic prayer to recover something that's been lost. And I recentered myself. And when I opened my laptop back up, sure enough, I found the files right there. Mm-hmm. And something that you said to me when I told that whole experience to you really stuck with me, which was that, wow, you know, like you deserve it because you use the resources available to you to get through this and make it happen. And it just makes so much sense how you've been, I mean, that is just a minuscule type of scenario, right? But it just makes so much sense how you've been able to encounter just so such monumental life experiences and be able to find a way to get through them. Because obviously a lot of times the only way is through, but just even your sisterhood in moments like that and being supportive and recognizing that we need to use the resources available to us. We need to reach out to our community when we are in need. You were there for me when I hit you up, you know, it's so beautiful. And how do you cultivate that? How do you build that? And honestly, like, what does bring that? Like, is it cultural backgrounds make communities, or what does bring that spirit together?
I mean, well, kind of, that's the only way I want to live. You know, I want to be comfortable enough to be like, yo, like, this just happened. Like, you know, all hands on deck, your girl's in trouble. You know, what can we do? What are the resources available? Like, let's exhaust every possible avenue, because man, I just know if there's a will, there's a way. And I do truly believe that. But that, you know, that is cultural. I learned that in the immigrant community. That's how we conducted ourselves. You know, if somebody was in trouble, we were there to help. If somebody needed babysitting, okay, we'll take the kid. Oh, you need, you know, these folks to pick up kids from school, take them to, you know, practice, whatever it is. People were there for each other. Somebody got sick, people were making food, you know, bringing it over. That's the kind of community we lived in, because we didn't have those resources. We couldn't be open with our problems to the world. And so we relied on each other, and we created our little community, our little safe community there. And we were there for each other. And I saw that. I saw my mom always open her home to people who were traveling, who were passing by, who needed help, who needed to find work, who needed food. My mom was always opening her door. And that was my experience. And so I'm so done, you know, living in this sort of individualistic kind of society where the 1% tell you that everyone needs to be an individual and bootstrap, but meanwhile they're enjoying all of what, you know, the gifts of community and lending a hand and connections and resources, and we have to just, like, you know, fight by ourselves. No, we're not alone in this. We are one. I reached out to folks to help me because I knew that if I was good, I was going to pass that on. And then that person's going to pass that on. And then the next person, the next person, the next person. And that is how we take care of each other. That's how we get anywhere. Why do I need people on my team? If I want to succeed, if I want to do big things, if I want to lead a happy life, I need people around me who are going to hold me when I don't have the strength to, and those people need me to hold them, vice versa, right? And that's the kind of world I want to live in, and we need to be thinking more like that. We need to be thinking of, like, sharing our resources in that way, because rich people do it all the time.
I mean, that was gonna be, honestly, that was gonna be what I wanted to ask you, which is, like, do we people of color do a good enough job of having each other's backs?
Yes, absolutely. But a lot of us are still kind of, like, on that hamster wheel. We're still on that ladder. You know, we're still following these rules and using these tools that do not apply to us, that were not made for us.
Ooh, drop them bars.
You know what I mean? They weren't made for us. So we can't follow that. I was telling you about learning about radical self-love. And I learned that while listening to an episode of a podcast, Finding Your Way, and Sonia Renee Taylor was on that. And I learned so much, and it connected. I connected so many things about myself with, oh shit, that's what I've been doing this whole time. Not giving up, holding out for hope, reaching out to my community when I needed to, being there for my community when my community needed me. That is all part of radical self-love. That is loving oneself. That is loving humanity.
Because it's like, it's needing to feel like you're worthy of it, which is a recent discovery of mine, is that that's a lot of times, like, at the foundation, is that we feel like we are not even worth, like, it's not even that we're scared or nervous to ask for help, but that we're, like, not worth it. Like, well, that person.
Oh, absolutely. We're not worth the help. But also, they teach us that if we ask for help, that's embarrassing. That if we ask for help, that means we don't deserve it. because somehow the images and the stories that we have heard, first of all, none of us in them. The only stories that we have heard about ourselves have been negative ones. And not always, but most of them growing up, especially when you're, you know, during those formative years, we're hearing all these negative stories about ourselves. And yet we're looking at white folk and we're like seeing them do it right. And it seems like they just did it on their own. It seems like they just bootstrapped. It seems like they just had a dream and followed it. No, they had tons of money. They had tons of like capital and resources.
Yeah, the privileges. Yeah.
And a lot of those people were like living kind of like in a socialist society in their own. Meanwhile, and like Bernie says, we're forced to, or maybe Martin Luther King said this and Bernie quoted Martin Luther King, we're over here living, you know, rugged capitalism. We're following rugged capitalism for the rest of the folks. And then the 1% gets to enjoy socialism and those values and the sharing of resources and whatnot. So that's just
and meanwhile, our rugged capitalism is kind of sucking the soul out of the world.
Sucking the soul, confusing us, like giving us these tools. Here you go. This is how you make it. No, that's not how you make it. You make it by loving yourself. You make it by sharing your resources. You get it by voting accordingly, voting for measures, voting for to change laws that are going to help our community as a whole. Why do we have homelessness in this country? It doesn't make sense. Why are people hungry in this country? It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't.
Doesn't. Richest country like on the planet. It just doesn't, there's no way.
It's despicable. It's despicable.
Whoop. Sorry to interrupt you guys, but real quick, I just wanted to remind you all that we are really proud to partner with Lyft to make sure that getting to the polls is not a barrier on election day. What that means is we are offering discounted rides to make sure that you get out the vote no matter who or what you vote for. Use code 2020LYFT on election day. Let them know Amani sent you. All right, back to the program.
I love that you bring up the fact that we are conditioned to feel shame for asking for or receiving help, because obviously not only is that a feeling and a sentiment that we are conditioned to feel on an individual level, but that's the exact same philosophy that's applied to government programs, funding, actual initiatives to level the playing field even slightly. To help empower communities that obviously have been completely neglected from a lot of these privileges and resources for so long. And it's also, of course, very timely that we're talking about this, given that just this week, the census deadline was cut short by 2 months, over 2 months.
I was so surprised. It was yesterday, no?
It was yesterday. It was literally.
I was like, wait a minute. I had a whole census video. Like I was going to make it. Was like, you guys, you got to like fucking fill out the census. But yeah. It was, why was it cut short?
So a court last minute said they basically allowed Trump's decision to end the deadline early. Wow. And in doing so, obviously it is a very politicized decision, because the census is how we figure out the makeup of this country. Happens once every 10 years, once a decade, you know? And of course, one of the most important reasons why we need to get counted is so that we can figure out how to delegate the programs that we do have, what resources to make available. It even dictates what the poverty threshold should be, or how many seats that we have in Congress. And all of these things should be decided by the actual people, right? Like the actual population, so the actual makeup. And of course, as you can imagine, it's absolutely the minority communities, the people of color, that are always the ones most at risk of being undercounted, that are the hardest to reach, to be counted. And just cutting the deadline short is truly a travesty. And it's going to have devastating consequences for generations to come. Just like this election cycle, 2020 is bringing just a whole catastrophic levels of, you know.
Damn, that's so violent.
Impact. Yeah, but you know, that's why it really stood out to me when you were sharing a lot of your experiences growing up, mm-hmm. experiencing, you know, the short end of the stick with a lot of these policies, how they do come to pass it on a day-to-day basis for people like you. You know, like it's a 14-year-old girl that depends on these types of resources for her survival. And I'm just wondering, you know, what do you think with this conversation about community, is our liberation in our respective communities coming together and uniting to create some type of seismic shift in our favor? Or is it going to take more than that to kind of go up against the system that's leaving so many of us out?
Look, it's not...
That's it. Diane, lead us through this one.
Hold on, let me see.
Who's here this for us? What's the antidote, girl? Drop it, bro.
No, I have no idea. No. I'm like, you didn't hear it from me, but no. You know, that's such a loaded question. And I think that we are where we are because it is what it is.
Okay.
And no. I think that, look, we've seen a huge shift. I haven't seen this in my lifetime. You know, like the kind of radicalization that I have been seeing in the streets and on social media and just everywhere. I've never seen in my lifetime. I've only heard about stuff like that. You know, when you heard about movements in the past that you wish you could have been a part of. And so I think that, first of all, we're behind as hell. Like, I cannot believe that we are going through all of the ills that we are going through. But I think it's gonna take time, but I think that we're moving towards the right direction. I mean, fuck, if you don't see how.
Are we though? Because, so I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I have to play devil's advocate, right?
Because go ahead. You always do. I'm like, have hope, you guys. You're like, chill out, Barack Obama.
Wait. Let me bring that down real quick. Let me bring that down real quick. No, because I 100% agree with you. You know, I was out there in the protests back in 2014, 2015, when Ferguson was happening. Mm-hmm. And I recall very clearly how taboo it was for anybody to say Black Lives Matter at that mm-hmm. time. It was so radical and just so far-fetched. And witnessing this evolution over time obviously has been very, very just eye-opening and exciting, because you do feel like, okay, like things are changing.
But it's still very slow.
Yeah, but then, you know, things like the Breonna Taylor decision happen.
Mm-hmm.
But then another person gets shot up in the street, another viral hashtag, another, you know, officer off the hook. We see another toddler being tried on in a courtroom, you know.
Oh yeah, because our system is trash. I mean, all of that has been there and
it's existed. That is this country.
That is kind of like what our country has been about, is like basically, you know, keep white people safe. Everybody else can go fuck themselves, basically. And we're going to do our best to fuck with them as hard as we can. So that's already there. I'm just saying us, the people, and I may be living in a bubble. You know what I mean? I watched The Social Dilemma the other day. I'm like, oh, holy crap. Or like the same 10 people liking my post. You know what I mean? Like I'm preaching to the choir type thing. Like the only people listening to me are like my same circle. You know what I mean? And that's scary to think. It's like, damn, maybe we're not making as many strides as we should be. But I think that we are. And it's clear that we need to be a part of that change. It's clear that we need to make those steps and be very involved, because we've seen what non-involvement looks like. Look at the shit that's going on. That's what not participating gets you. And so if you think that you're not a part of this narrative, if you think that this doesn't affect you, it does. If you think you're not smart enough to participate, bullshit. That is what they have made you think about yourself. You are smart as hell. You know why? Because you have experienced this with us. You know how terrible it is. Mm-hmm. And you have the power to change it. Voting is one thing. Voting, national elections, sure. Let's get this creep out of the White House. Let's get this toasted, ridiculous administration, evil doers out, right? That is some like superhero, you know, amen, superhero shit that we're experiencing right now. Meaning like, I don't know, like the Justice League versus the Fatal Five. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like throw up some, the bat signal.
Exactly. Like, get the hell, yeah. You know, we got to get this guy out, sure. But local elections is where it's at. That's where we're going to see the difference. And movements are, that's where we see the difference. And continuing to support people who are doing this work on the ground, continuing to support activists, people who are talking about this shit on a daily basis. That's who I want to hear. That's who I want to support. That's where I want to give my money to.
Yeah.
And when I, you know, people are like, so, you know, they're feeling so pessimistic about voting. It's like, yeah, you feel pessimistic about voting because we've never experienced voting and following through. We haven't done that because we haven't been conditioned that way. We've been conditioned to be distracted. We've been conditioned to think that nobody cares about us. We've been conditioned to think that we are, you know, ignorant about what's going on. We're none of those things. We're none of those things. We are powerful. What were we talking about last time is that we are fearful of our own power.
Yeah.
We are so powerful. Once we start making moves, woo! It's going to be a game changer. It really is. And I think that we just need to give ourselves that shot. We need to allow ourselves to give ourselves that shot to vote and keep people accountable, to vote people who deserve us, who lead with love. That's what we need. We need to vote for Senate, Congress, City Council, Mayor, County Board of Supervisors, local measures, vote for new laws. You know, freaking vote for DA here in California. We need to get fucking Jackie Lacey out of office, vote for George Gascon. And when we vote for George Gascon, we keep him accountable. That's what we do. That's a powerful ass seat, right? Board of Supervisors. We vote for that. I mean, I don't know about Board of Supervisors. Get to knowing the resources are out there. BLM LA has them. There's like tons of organizations that are doing this work that care about us. Follow them. Follow the people who are doing this work. You got to vote for LA Community College trustees. That's how like nitty gritty it needs to get. If you want to see change in your community, you got to do it locally. Because that will trickle down nationally if it's done well. And if you are keeping track, if you're really using your voice in the way that you need to be, it's hard work. But then, you know, we haven't tried it. So I think that it'll pay off in the long run. I know that sounds really hopeful.
I mean, that is kind of like the prescription that America needs right now. Like you said, a lot of times hope is really the fuel, all we have to really take us to the next level. Mm-hmm.
Let's try it. Let's try being engaged. Let's really, really give it our all.
I love that call to action because we do need to recognize that we deserve and are entitled to this level of representation. We deserve to have our voices be heard. We deserve to have that seat at the table. We deserve to lead the table in the conversations that are most detrimentally impacting us directly over people who might otherwise not be so affected. And it brings me back to one of the last conversations that you and I did have, which is you were speaking a lot about the double imposter syndrome that you have to go through, right? Mm-hmm. So you kind of, you mentioned it already, which is that you had to basically live your whole life hiding this huge part of who you are. It brings me back to one of the recent conversations that you and I had, which is that feeling of double imposter syndrome. And you've briefly mentioned it earlier on in this conversation, which is that you were forced to live most of your life hiding this crucial part of who you are. And obviously on top of that is the layers of imposter syndrome that you and I have spoken about quite regularly, which is that of being women of color in these spaces, in these industries that weren't made for us. And really navigating and finding that space. And I do want to share that and I've told you this personally too, it has been in large part your inspiration that I have found so much strength from. And I think it's just really cool because, especially when we talk about community, community looks so many different ways, right? Community isn't always, you know, that physical gathering of like large groups of people. Mm-hmm. Community can often look like showing that solidarity and that support. Community can also often look like living your life at its best, navigating that adversity and, you know, doing your best at it, raising that bar to make it easier for the next person. And I feel like that's something that you've done time and time again for me, you know, and witnessing even just you navigate the entertainment industry as a very vocal Latina woman speaking about these issues and how you have become so conscious in the way that you do your work. You know, and you are an activist even in your professional life and your business decisions, which I find to be just so inspiring for me and has really brought my understanding and my openness as also, you know, a person in this space and also a business leader mm-hmm. to that new level. And I think that it's within those interactions that I find so much promise, because that's how we start chipping away at those imposter syndromes that have been ingrained in us. And you exemplify that there are levels to it. You know, we can all talk about how that feels together, but there are some that, you know, have to experience just like more dimensions to it than others. And it's very apparent how our responsibility to these issues that matter to our communities, how much of a service it does in that regard. I don't know if you have like any thoughts on that.
Thank you for saying that and for seeing that in me. I'm so trying my best. You know, I think we're all where we are and we are all doing our best, as long as, you know, when we do get off that winding road, when we do start doubting ourselves or, you know, making a wrong decision here or there, or shutting everything down and having to lie down, as long as we get back on that road, then we're good. And I'm just continually learning about that by just opening myself up to experiences and people who I admire and are doing the work. You know, we're so used to like feeling like we're missing something when we see others achieve something that we don't have, and saying, oh, they must have this and I must be a fake because I don't have that. That's bullshit. That is there for you so that you can see it, take what you need and apply it to you if that's what you desire, if that's the kind of life you're trying to lead. You know, I mean, I kind of fell into this life by necessity, you know, because I needed to share my story because I had to unload it. I couldn't carry it by myself anymore. I had to.
That's exactly how I felt about my book too. 100%.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. Wait.
It's like you're releasing this experience into the universe so that we can collectively carry it together.
Yeah. Like, I cannot be the only person feeling this way. And what happens if I share my experience and other people thought that they were the only ones feeling this way? And what if my journey looks like theirs and they can, you know, take examples from that? And then, you know, it's really more of a domino effect, I guess. who invented these sayings? I'm like, what? And so I fell into it, but it just made sense. And I kept following that, but also following people who before me who were living the way I wanted to live. And, you know, I take a lot of my direction from my activist friends and you, my friend Kendrick Sampson, who's an actor and leading one of the leaders, Patrice Cullors, Kendrick Sampson, Future, Dr. Malina Abdullah. Like, these are all people that I follow. These are people in the Black Lives Matter movement. And following these people, just listen to Black people. It is this fucking zip period. Listen to Black people. Listen to Black women. And you'll be good. that has 100%. Been, you know, that like if, and we know this, if Black folk ain't free, we are not free. And they have been the leaders and change makers since the beginning. And that has been really key for me.
Yeah. And what historically the oppression that the Black community has experienced has been the litmus test for the rest of us. Mm-hmm, so it's the front lines of the entire movement.
Absolutely. I've created this community that aligns with my values and I align with theirs. Mm. And then I can apply that in all areas of my life, in relationships, in work. If we're talking about dismantling oppressive systems, if we want more representation, then your entire life should reflect that. Your grocer should reflect that. The gym you go to should reflect that. You know, the people you surround yourself, your agents, right? We're talking about the entertainment industry. Your agents, your managers, your lawyers should reflect that. That representation that you're talking about, that representation that you think will be the game changer in moving us forward and towards liberation. And I've been following all of these people who have been doing that. And I have significantly seen a change in my life by aligning myself with that, because it doesn't make sense if you're like, you know, speaking about liberation and representation and, you know, I don't know, your manager is like Harvey Weinstein, I guess, like naming like the worst possible people or people who like really don't care about your community. Like, you have to work and be around people who care about your community just as much as you do. If not, get the hell out of the way. That's all.
Boom. Clip that right there. Drop that gem. No, I love it. I mean, it's so true. I mean, that's the philosophy that we've always went by at Muslim Girl, right? It's go to the communities and hear from them that are on the receiving end of these conversations that you're talking about, you know, like hear from them directly.
Mentioning Harvey Weinstein was like not the move. Like I needed a better example. That's just like triggering on so many levels.
No, but I get what you're saying. I get, because that's how the Harvey Weinsteins happen, right? It's because we aren't always that conscious of who we are bringing into our own spaces when we're afraid to speak up
for ourselves and show ourselves love by speaking. When we speak up for ourselves, it's not about hurting anybody else. It's about loving ourselves.
Right. I mean, when it comes to especially the immigration policies that we're all trying to make sense of right now, trying to combat, trying to reform entirely, what is your call to action for those listening? How can they be most impactful? How can they harness and leverage their communities to make a change in that arena?
Yeah, immigration is a total shit show. I mean, it was designed.
Say it, sister.
It was designed to keep Black and Brown people out. Straight up, like that is what it was designed to do. They came here, they wiped out Native Americans, said this is our country, and basically anybody else who isn't white cannot come in. That's it. And so we need to understand that is what it stemmed from. Like, so there's no way really to reform this system that already doesn't work for us and wasn't meant to work for us. I mean, so yeah, I say abolish. Absolutely.
Hell yeah. Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
Love it.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. That is the goal is abolition.
Right.
Abolish police, abolish Homeland Security, abolish all the damn thing. It doesn't work. Doesn't work for us. It's just terrible policies that have been built on. It's like terrible policy on top of terrible policy and blah, 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 blah. So yeah, that is should be the mission. That should be the goal. Right now, we should try to lift some of these terrible policies, like the policies from 1996 that really kind of set the stage for the immigration policy that we see now, the criminalization of entering the country, that the criminalization of asylum seekers. People seeking refuge should not be criminalized, should not be punished, especially when this country, the United States of America, has had much to do with the displacement of folks coming over here seeking a better life. This country has had to do with every ill thing that has happened to all countries and all people, all immigrants coming here, right? And you know it. You know it. We see it with the wars that they started. Just the United States supporting Saddam Hussein for so long. And all of a sudden, like, when it wasn't convenient for them, it's like they, and I just, this is me just having a conversation. So please excuse me if I'm talking off the cuff, but like, they literally burnt countries down and left them there and said, you can't come in. Look at what happened in El Salvador and Central America in the 70s and the 80s, destabilized entire fucking like countries. And then when they came here for refuge, oh no, you can't come in.
Stay there in your ruins.
Yeah.
Stay there in your shithole third world country.
Exactly.
We don't want anything to do with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's start with
which that alone is when we're speaking about like imposter syndrome, that too is its own layer of imposter syndrome for so many minorities in this country.
Yeah. We need to know that we came here not because it was just like, oh, America seems cool. No, it was because our countries were devastated after the US involvement in a lot of them, Let's be honest. Look it up. I don't have all the history for you, but that should be something when you're thinking about immigration, like go in deep, because a lot of the policies that are in place now reflect a lot of the harm that the US has done in other countries. So let's start there. Let's start by really educating ourselves about the immigration system and how it came to be and why it is the way it is. Before we start dismissing it, because the reason why the immigration system is the way it is, first of all, like obviously the United States has built this narrative of like the evil immigrant, the evil brown and black person.
Right.
But also it's so convoluted. It's so intricate. And like, it's made that way to be confusing and to not make any sense. Just like what we see with the administration, it's all kind of like, it's just sort of designed that way. So let's just start supporting people who are doing this work. Listen to activists, listen to immigrants, listen to undocumented folks who are saying, this is what we need. And go from there. I mean, you know, we have an outdated visa system that whole thing needs to be reworked, but it needs to be reworked with the acknowledgement that all of these laws were put in place to keep because of racism, to keep black and brown people out. Like, start there and then you'll know how to move forward.
No, that's brilliant. I think that's the best piece of advice, not just for immigration policy, but for so many social issues that are impacting people of color today. Educate ourselves and place it within historical context, because otherwise we're really just moving blind through this whole thing.
Gosh, we need to elect more people who are like, all right,
live like us, breathe like us. Yes,
more Ayanna Pressley, more Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, more of that.
Hell yeah.
More Bernie. My baby Bernie.
I know. We really, really missed him after these presidential debates, the way that they went down. Diane, I could continue this conversation with you forever. You know this. And I am so sad that, you know, this is kind of reaching the end of our time with you, because especially after this fire that you just dropped, I'm all charged up right now and I could keep going. But I want to ask you a question that we pose to every guest that we have on The Antidote, which is, what is at the top of your mind politically right now?
People's liberation.
Okay.
I don't know. People's liberation. I guess that's like vague.
Or
it's
what like it comes broad. Down to right now.
It's broad. We need to free ourselves from these systems. We need to free ourselves from our chains. That's all we have to lose. You know, I go to these protests and they go, the only thing we have to lose, we have nothing to lose but our chains. We have nothing to lose but our chains. Let's speak up for ourselves. Let's show up. Let's vote. Let's follow the movements. Let's be vocal. Let's do all of those things. We have nothing to lose. Let's go after our dreams. Let's go fucking after what we want. Say, fuck it. I'm going to love and I'm going to live for me and I'm going to love people and and that's what I'm about, because I don't want to live in a world where I'm just like hearing nonsense and hatred and, you know, gosh, that's just so gross. I don't want to live like that. Let's go after for what we want and let's fight for it. Let's fight to the death for it. Dun, dun, dun.
Wow.
Sorry.
Mic drop. Mic drop. Then like the CIA clips this. We told you they were plotting revolution.
I know. I love how I was like, we're in a revolution. And you're like, not really a revolution. Let me tell you something, honey. Oh, in order for this to be a revolution, there needs to be a few key things. I love it.
Wow. Okay. So is that the antidote?
I think the antidote is that, but let me give you a few. Just love yourself. Like, use this time to experiment. Use this time to see what you can do. You'll be surprised. You can do a lot. Don't be afraid of your power.
Wow.
You're powerful as hell. If not, if you weren't powerful, they wouldn't try so hard to suppress us. I know like everybody says that. They wouldn't try so hard to like keep our, you know, take our voting rights and all
it's
that. But
true.
It's true. They wouldn't try so hard to like keep us down. Like some of this stuff is like so ridiculous. Like wanting control over our bodies, wanting control over our minds, our money, everything. It's like, you are powerful, you know, see how you can change, how you can flip it on its head. And I think that we can make little steps each day to do that.
I mean, power, you definitely embody through every pore of your being, especially for such a tiny person. So
very little.
Diane Guerrero, thank you so much for joining us on The Antidote. It's always such a pleasure to talk with you, and I can't wait till our next conversation.
I love you, girl. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.